start with a letter sent in my local optician, read by Peter Donaldson.
Dear Mr. Zaremba, I write to inform you that your eye examination is now due. I strongly advise you to have regular sight tests to ensure that your eyes are healthy. Please note, the practice is now open until 7 o'clock on Mondays to cater for those people who find it difficult to see me during normal hours.
Thanks to Chris Zaremba of Epsom for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Linda Smith and Phil Hammond. And facing them on my left, Fred McCauley and Marcus Brigstock. Let me start with Linda. Linda, why will it soon be time for a second round of golf?
Well, George W. Bush, badly drawn president, he's planned this golf war, and it's terrible. It's a bit like my barbecue. No one's interested. No one wants to come. No one's RSVP'd. As I say, he's done the invitations, he's booked the bar, he's got a disco, everything, but no takers. I think he's had the knockback from Jordan, Turkey, Germany, France, most of the Congress, Wincy Willis, Keith Harris, most of the major religions, and Douglas Hurd. No one's biting at all. No one's up for it. I can't think why, really. I think, actually, there's one surefire way of stopping it, saying, all right, W, we'll come to your war as soon as you write the sentence, the Middle East is a volatile area with a complex and difficult history. If you write that correctly spelt in your best writing, we'll join you. I think we're safe.
I feel a bit sorry for Tony Blair, because he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. I think the best thing about Tony helping him, he might be able to give George a lesson in geography. If he doesn't, I feel pretty scared.
Wars don't last long these days.
No. But I'm feeling a bit sad for a bit scared for the inhabitants of Iceland at the moment. And you wouldn't want to be Nasser Hussein at the moment, would you?
The surefire sign that there is trouble brewing was that George W. and George Sr. were photographed this week in a golf buggy. And it's just like, what war?
He's scary, isn't he? George
Sr. Old George, yeah, because you can just see him picking on him, saying, come on then, George W., have you sorted him out yet? Are you old Saddam, come on, I started it, you finish. And he's going, Dad.
I can do it.
What's interesting is every man and his dog's against it. Even George W. Bush's dog is against the war and must be regretting the pretzel incident, or actually saved George's life by licking him. Bad move
saved
by the dog.
Saved his life by just giving him something to
no,
live for?
No, when George choked on the pretzel, the most powerful man in the world can't swallow a pretzel, and his dog licked his face and brought him round and got help.
Have it destroyed.
I think it's fair to say that swallowing wasn't a problem when Clinton was in office.
Speculation is rife the US will soon launch a preemptive strike against Iraq, despite Saddam's invitation to the UN to resume their weapons inspection. The US plan to bomb Iraq by striking at the heart of Saddam's regime is called the inside-out approach, which coincidentally is what happens when W steps into his trousers each morning. 2 points to Linda. Phil, why is now the winter of our discontent?
Is it anything to do with the slump in manufacturing?
Yes, it is.
Apparently the British aren't very good at high volume. Apart from George Best and Jordan, it's not something we're terribly good at, and partly because of the Jubilee celebrations, nobody's making anything apart from drop scones and buntings for the last 3 months. So we're just not doing anything. It's going down the pan, and I think we'll just give up. We're sort of exporting patients at the moment, so giving up on health. I think we'll just end up doing media studies. But I have a friend who does an engineering degree, supposed to make things, and I saw him the other day, and he made this huge box with lots of whirly things coming out of it, and some bells, and a couple of pipe cleaners, and razor blades. And I said, what's that? He said, it's an outcome. Apparently, that's all we do these days, we measure outcomes, so we can lead the world in manufacturing outcomes. It's the only way back for Britain, I feel.
Well, I mean, another thing that was blamed for the slump was World Cup euphoria. Well, I think you in Scotland have got nothing to reproach yourselves with. You managed to resist that, didn't you?
Although, on Wednesday of this week, it was announced that the Scottish economy had slipped into recession officially, which, actually, we're probably quite pleased about, because, you know, we've just been a wee bit dour recently with all of that, with the economy going so well, so... It's fair cheered us up.
This is a general British tradition of muddling through, isn't there? We don't like to do things too hard. We muddle through. That's always been the British way.
We'll come up with something new in Scotland. I mean, we have penicillin, you know, telephone, television. Just you wait. There's something around the corner.
The downturn in manufacturing, both in Scotland and England, was blamed on the Queen's Golden Jubilee, though technically Prince Edward has never been productive. So, 2 points to Phil. Marcus, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
Why will you find Rowan among the mistletoe this week?
Well, I honestly haven't got a clue. Not a single clue. Fred, can you help?
Mistletoe is something vaguely Christmassy, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's Rowan. Rowan, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's turned into a druid.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Hang on. Of that.
He hasn't awarded them any points. Has it got something to do with the Archbishop of Canterbury?
Turning into a druid?
Yes. Yeah. That Welsh bloke with a... I've not seen any pictures of his feet, but you know there's some serious sandaling going on down there.
It's part of the National Life Stedford, this druid ceremony, and it's not the same as English druids. English druids apparently dance buck naked around Stonehenge smoking pot, but the Welsh druid's very serious.
Oh, so you're saying the Welsh ones are less interesting?
No, it's far more interesting for him to dress up. I think, actually, there's a big conspiracy here, because the Welsh don't want to lose him to Canterbury. They think it'll be a waste. So they've dressed him up in this white Ku Klux Klan advert thing, and they made him hold this six-foot spear, and they're taking photos of him, saying, "Stick your tongue out. Go on, Ron. Go on, my son." To completely discredit him, so he won't be able to move to Canterbury. But apparently it's not a pagan thing at all, being a druid. It's just a bit of harmless fun in aid of the arts in Wales. So he's...
Has anyone heard him speak yet? Hello, I am the Archbishop of Canterbury. The Church of where, you say?
I think it'll be nice, a Welsh Archbishop.
Does this go out in Wales?
Oh, God, don't we know it.
You'll get a letter from angry of...
New news quiz favourite Rowan Williams, whose induction as an honorary white druid has caused evangelicals to accuse him of dabbling in paganism. Dr. Williams himself was unavailable for comment as he's busy trying to track down a virgin to sacrifice. Not easy in Cardiff. Dr. Williams said his induction into the Welsh Gorseth of Bards in a wet, windy ceremony was the greatest honour Wales could bestow. Yes. Fred, listen to this.
Don't stop me now. Don't stop me.
Cos I'm having a good time. Having a good time.
You shouldn't start leaping through the sky like a tiger.
Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
How are you not on Radio 1?
Fred, why is the party finally over for the royal family?
The Queen has been on her farewell tour. unless she's going to see 75 years in office... she put on a false moustache and buck teeth and went out and gigged around the country with the rest of the remaining band of Queen. and it came to a shuddering halt this week here in Scotland. But not the last day, incidentally, she spent the day in Carlisle. I mean, talk about saving the best till last. You can just see Philip going, really? Do we have to? And they went to Carlisle and they had a fly past in Carlisle of three jets. I saw a hawk, a tornado and a Eurofighter. And it's just like, crikey, you know, let's bring out the big guns. And then she came up to Edinburgh and they went to the military tattoo. And the very last thing they had was a garden party at Balmoral for 3,000 or 4,000 people that can't go to the Environment Summit in Johannesburg. But... big news here in Edinburgh. It was big news because they went to the tattoo the other night, and the Duke of Edinburgh was there, and there was a picture of the Duke of Edinburgh joking with some dancers, and I was just thinking, what is he saying to them? He's saying, do you know they just call me the Duke of here?
I saw on TV a bit of film from that garden party, and Phil, the Duke of Edinburgh, was wearing the most extraordinary get-up. He had a kilt and a Panama hat. He looked as if it... Honestly, he looked as if he'd been dressed by underpaid nurses having a laugh.
I tell you, that kilt and Panama hat look is catching on.
Apparently he was asked at the very beginning of it what he was looking forward to most about the Jubilee Tour. He said the end of it. So I think now is very true. Well, the interesting thing about the Balmoral Party, it was held for 3,000 or 4,000 locals to thank them for giving her the privacy of being in Balmoral. And 3,000 locals peeing in a flower bed. So, thanks for that.
Yes. Come in. Now go away again.
I got asked as a sort of reasonably well-known Scot if I would go along and help give out the Duke of Edinburgh awards. And you get introduced to the Duke of Edinburgh, and somebody hadn't turned up. And the last minute they said, Fred, would you do two groups? And I said, yes, no problem. So they say, you stand here, and there's a semicircle of the kids, and then there's the parents in another semicircle, and the Duke of Edinburgh comes in, and he'll have a chat with one or two of them. Then you get introduced to him, and you hand the awards out, and he moves on. So he comes to group number five and he says hello to some of the kids and the parents. Then he meets me and he goes, hello. And the chap says, it's Fred McCauley. He does the morning radio show here in Scotland. He's a comedian. He goes, how do you do? Thank you very much. Here's the awards. And he moved on. And some guy grabbed my elbow, took me around the back into group six. And he comes down the line at group six. and it's Fred. And he's going, have we met?
See, I told you all these foreigners looked alike.
The Queen spoke of her summer of great joy and happiness, so obviously she didn't watch the World Cup or may even be unaware that Germany lost in the final. We start round two with a notice seen at a Forestry Commission car park.
The area is liable to flooding. If this notice is covered, do not park your car here.
Thanks to Stuart Arnold of Birmingham for that. Linda, who thinks two wheels good, four wheels bad?
Is this the insurance companies? Is this something about car insurance?
Yes.
I think. Apparently, drivers are going to be made to pay for accidents involving cyclists, whether it's the cyclist's fault or not, which initially seems quite unfair. But then you think, well, if they are having accidents involving cyclists, they must be driving on the pavement. So really, that is quite reckless.
Apparently, if the cyclist rams you from behind, gets out, drags you to the window, sticks spokes through your eyes, kebabs your baby, it's all your fault. It seems a tad unfair. But any road user thinks they're in the right, don't you? If you're a pedestrian, if you're jaywalking buck naked across the M25 with a traffic cone on your head, you think you're in the right. And there's a new breed of cyclists apparently called gorilla cyclists who don't use hand signals and go through red lights. But fair enough. I mean, you know, cycling in fancy dress is hard enough.
50 quid a pop, isn't it? That's what the insurance company is going to have to pay. But I reckon there's a new business available for making a bit of cash. You just career your bike into a car and say, look, I'll do it for 25. Do it for 25 cash. We'll say no more about it. There you are. Two for one offer. That's 40 quid.
See, it's just the old compensation cult. People be throwing themselves into the cars, won't they? You get that in the NHS at the moment. You get people who bank on an operation as getting some, you know, they put a down payment on their patio before they've had their hernia operation because they're hoping somebody will cock up. It's the old compensation culture.
Oh, compensation culture. Those adverts for Claims Direct, they drive me mad. People
evil.
Waving their stumps at you for money like medieval beggars, aren't they? Terrible going, I slipped on a banana skin and successfully sued the Dominican Republic.
Mm. The European Union has proposed legislation that would make drivers responsible for all accidents involving cyclists, even when the cyclists are at fault. Ministers fear a massive blockage will prevent them passing the legislation, though once they get past Mr. Prescott, it should be easy. If the government really wanted us all to travel on two wheels, they'd force us to park our cars in Glasgow overnight. Phil, why will your teeth cost you an arm and a leg?
Ah, now, there's a big problem with... has been a big problem with NHS dentistry for ages. And they're changing it. Instead of a dentist just drilling and filling... drilling and filling, dentists are now going to be salaried and they're going to do a general health check. So they'll be doing a breast examination, a cervical smear. Few of them doing that already. I've got their names if you want to see me afterwards. The whole problem with it is that nobody mentions the rationing word in the health service. You know, we ration everything, including dentists. I was walking down Whitehall the other day, where the cenotaph is there, sort of to commemorate the dead, and I noticed it's bang in between the Department of Health and the Treasury. So, apparently it's easier to find a dentist in Sarajevo than it is in Stirling.
I thought this was just in England, though, is it not, this new initiative? Because in Scotland, we just send our teeth in once every 3 months. They give them a bit of a scrub and they send them back. And you go, I'm most grateful.
You just scrub them twice a day with a Tunnock's wafer.
There is actually a gross disparity already between what you get on the NHS. The NHS, they won't give you white fillings. You can only have purple ones. You know, they take your filling out with a rusty compass.
You don't want those pauper's fillings, though.
No.
They are terrible. They're made of gruel.
Yeah.
Dentists have been paid NHS salaries rather than fees for individual work, and that could result in costlier checkups. The Shadow Health Secretary, Dr. Liam Fox, says the proposals are an attempt to divert attention from Labour's failure over dental care, particularly Robin Cook's failure to floss after eating spinach. Fred, who wants to put the mystery into history?
That's exactly the right noise.
Yeah. Mystery into history. I don't think I know.
You don't know?
It's gone all playground.
I do, don't I, Phil?
Yeah,
you do. You
know?
Go on then, tell them what I know.
Oh, no, can you just give us about three words?
Is it about ambulance survival times?
No.
No, I didn't think it was.
Sorry, man, I was miles away.
It's about a history. Go on. And see when you said...
It's about a history of a very mysterious organisation.
Oh, would right. It be... Oh, mysterious. Could it be the Masonics?
No.
Oh.
No.
Even more mysterious than the Masons.
Yes, a secret organisation.
The Mysterons.
MI...
He's nearly there.
MI5?
Yes, correct.
Oh. Excellent, we get the points.
Yes, you do.
Yes. Not that I'm competitive at all.
I knew it.
It's obviously a better kept secret up here than it is down south. There was a big blank page in one of the papers today, I saw that.
That was it.
It said, go straight to page 7.
You don't have a clue, do you?
No.
Then remember that MI5 is looking for a historian to write a history of the agency to celebrate its centenary in the year 2009.
No.
It's a little-known fact that for years MI5 has had a museum which allows members of the public to view its many secret documents. It's called a tapas bar in Soho. Excellent. Well, no points there at all. We start round three with an announcement heard over the tannoy at the Claygate Scout Group Summer Fete last month.
Would any scouts who haven't pulled yet... please go to the tug-of-war arena at the centre of the field.
Thanks to Paul Smith and Claygate for that, and we start the final round with Linda. Why is drinking no longer just a white wine for the lady?
The campaign for real ale, isn't it? Camra, who are trying to make beer more appealing to women. Is this true, yeah?
Yes, it is.
Quite a lot of women haven't even tried real ale. Apparently because they don't like the taste. Well, those girls are never going to be popular, are they? you've got to make an effort, really, haven't you? So they've not tried. So they're trying to make it more women-friendly. So they've taken it as a new symbol of Camra, a Sumerian goddess called Ninkazi. And they think this is going to work by having her... She used to make beer made of bread, really. It was like bread pudding, alcoholic. And it was as delicious as it sounds, and drunk through a straw, and they think they're going to create these women-friendly beers. The thing is, I don't think it's the beer that puts women off so much as the campaign for real ale, really. You don't really want a weekend Morris-dancing local government officer, really, inviting you for a drink, I find. And also, folk music is so hard to dance around your handbag to. So that's what this is, isn't it? Trying to get women to drink pints.
I bet Rowan Williams has had the odd real ale in his time, hasn't he?
That I think beardy he's no sandal. Stranger to an old peculiar.
I think they recommend that you drink real ale while you're breastfeeding. Apparently, it gives.
Who recommends that, Marcus? Don't just say they.
I do.
Oh, you recommend. All right.
You know, your lot, doctors.
Isn't there a danger of dropping the baby?
That's the Royal College
of Druids.
No, I
mean, not actually while you're doing it, but beforehand, because apparently it creates lots of hoppy memories for children. So. thank you for the applause. I feel it was worth it.
The campaign for real ale is trying to persuade more women to drink bitter. Half the people in the UK who go to pubs are women, or as they're known in Scotland, Englishmen. Ninkasi, the 4,000-year-old Sumerian goddess of beer, has been reclaimed as a champion of female drinking. She used to drink the other gods under the table before slinging her arm round Zeus and saying, "You're my best mate, you are." Marcus, who was happy to see a thief ponying up?
Ah, yes, this was a very clever thief who nicked someone's debit card, and he took it to the bookmaker and had a flutter on a couple of horses, one of which came in with fantastic odds. And being as it was a debit card, the proceeds were were credited directly to the card and straight into this woman's account. And, yeah, it's just stunning, isn't it? And then the bloke who'd nicked it took it back in and tried to claim the cash prize, and they just looked at him with a mixture of bafflement and pity and had him nicked. And whichever bookie it was has actually let the woman keep the money, even though the bets were basically invalid. So it's heartwarming, really.
Didn't the bookie notice something when the guy presented the card and it was like Janice Adams or something like that? Yeah, can have £4 each way, and certainly Janice.
The unexpected £291.40 in Mrs. Boyanson's account will almost cover the cost of the letter from the bank telling her about it. A friend of the thief said he got the idea of taking someone else's money to fund a massive gamble from Gordon Brown's last budget. Fred, why has travelling to the other side of the world never been quicker?
Is this a story about the couple that got lost going round the world? It's bizarre. I can't remember where they set off from, but they thought they were going to Sydney in Australia, but they were going to Sydney in Canada. Or they booked to go to Sydney in Australia, and they found themselves in Halifax, Nova Scotia, after about 12 hours. And they had to change planes, and presumably they're sitting going, "Halifax? But surely we should be nearer Wakefield." And they ended up on completely the wrong continent. And I think they only started to get suspicious when the second flight they got put on was a 25-seater with propellers. It's always a giveaway when you're on an aeroplane that you think's got about 8,000 miles to go and you've got a leather helmet and a white scarf.
Goggles. The goggles are always a giveaway, aren't they?
Apparently, when they landed in Canada, they thought they were going the long way round. That was their. And they decided, being plucky British people, that they'd enjoy the holiday while they were there. And they were quoted saying, "It's fantastic here. I particularly enjoy watching the pickup trucks."
You can just point out at this point that they did come from Sidcup.
Yeah.
So any of those destinations would have been a result.
One of the real giveaways that you're not in Australia is when the kangaroos have antlers as well.
The bears are a lot bigger as well, aren't they?
I'd love to see a grizzly hanging from a tree like that. Yeah, I'm very cuddly. Come on.
Emma Nunn and Raoul Sebastian from Sidcup flew out for a three-week holiday to Sydney, Australia, on a 25-seater plane which landed in Sydney, Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia. The inventor, Alexander Graham Bell, died on Cape Breton Island in 1922. He called for an ambulance but had to wait another 20 years for them to get a second phone on the island. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
This cutting was sent in by Marjorie Lockwood. It's from the Sunday Times. A suspected thief fled police during a late-night chase but was caught when his leg fell off. Officers in Dayton, Ohio, pursued a van that had been parked outside offices. A police spokesman explained he had a prosthetic leg which came off when he was running. This decreased his mobility.
Phil. This one's from the Brooklyn Courier. Alistair Gorry, an expatriate man living in Brooklyn, was recently diagnosed as clinically depressed, tanked up on antidepressants, and scheduled for controversial shock therapy when doctors realised he wasn't depressed at all, only Scottish.
That was obviously before the recession was announced.
Marcus.
Yeah, this one's sent in by Helen Bury, and it's from the Times. Mother hits daughter with frozen chicken is the headline. An old woman was left unconscious after attacking her daughter with a frozen chicken during a row over who was to prepare the evening meal, a court was told yesterday. Eliza Gross, 84, and her daughter Marcina Collins, 55, could not agree who should get up from watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Exeter Crown Court was told that after Mrs. Gross struck the first blows with the rock-hard frozen chicken and a rolling pin, Collins retaliated with a meat tenderizer, hitting her mother repeatedly over the head and fracturing her skull.
Fred. Serious subject. A young man dropped his trousers in front of a 26-year-old woman. He was about 5'5" tall, with slightly spiky bleached hair, wearing a T-shirt and carrying a bucket. This comes from Barry Chapman, and he says, any chance you could let Jeremy Hardy read it? No.
Before we leave you, here's a letter from the Walthamstow Guardian, sent in by Roger Price.
Can any of your readers remember when the Palace Theatre in the High Street, Walthamstow, put on shows with Karina, the woman with the alligators? She used to walk on stage with the alligators, put them in a trance, open their jaws, and put her head in their mouths. I'd be most interested to know what happened to her.
Goodbye. Were Linda Smith, Bill Hammond, Marcus Brigstock and Fred McCauley. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by George Poole, Simon Littlefield and Paul McKenzie, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.